せ。
忘ればや。
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya。
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya。Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 24, Worshipping Govardhan Hill, text 20.
Vatita Brahmana Vipro
Rajanyo
Rakshaya
Bhuva
Vaishyastu Vartaya Jivech Chudrastu Dvijasevaya
Vatita
Brahmana
Vipro
Rajanyo Rakshaya Bhuva Vaishyastu Bhartaya Jivech Chudrastu Dvijasevaya Bhartaita
Lives
Brahmana
By the Vedas
Vipra
The Brahmana
Rajanya,
the member of the ruling class.
Rakshaya,
by protection.
Bhuva,
of the earth.
Vaishya,
the Vaishya.
Tu,
on the other hand.
Bhartaya,
by trade.
Jivet,
lives.
Shudra,
the Shudra.
To
and
Dvijasevaya
by serving the twice born Brahmanas,
Kshatriyas and Vaishyas.
Translation: The Brahmana maintains his life by studying and teaching the Vedas, the member of the royal order by protecting the earth, the Vaishya by trade, and the Shudra by serving the higher twice born classes.Purport. After glorifying dharma, or work, Lord Krishna now explains what he means by prescribed duties born of one's nature. He was not referring to any whimsical activity, but rather to the religious duties prescribed in the Varnashrama, or Vedic social system. Next text. The occupational duties of the Vaishya are conceived in four divisions.Farming, commerce, cow protection, and money lending. Out of these, we as a community are always engaged in cow protection. Next. The causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe, and through sexual combination causes it to become full of variety. Purport.Anticipating the possible objection that a livelihood based on cows certainly depends on Lord Indra, who supplies rain, Lord Krishna here introduces a mechanistic theory of existence known as atheistic Sankhya. The tendency to attribute exclusive causality to the apparently mechanistic functions of nature is an old tendency indeed.5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna referred to a doctrine already well known in human society. Om Jnana Jivanandasya Kiranjana Shalakya Chakshur Militangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhudhitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasati Gaur Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna
Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama You are hearing a rare treat. Lord Krishna is speaking concoctions. There's no doubt what Krishna is saying is a concoction. Yet it is pleasing because it's coming from the Supreme Personality of God in himself. The purpose of all this concoction? To diminish the false pride of Indra. How is Krishna going to conclude this presentation? Mahendra kim karishyati. What is the need of Indra? That's the bottom line. Mahendra kim karishyati. And in getting to that point, Krishna goes through elaborate word jugglery and elaborate philosophical concoction. Of course, because it's Krishna speaking, the cowherd people of Vrindavan are taking it all as nectar. Krishna wants to accomplish his purposes. Actually, the Vrijvasis don't care that much about Indra. They were just doing this yajna tradition. But as we said before, Krishna wants that Vrindavan firmly is fixed on the principle of pure devotion, exclusive devotion to Krishna. So, Krishna's been glorifying work in the past few verses, the Karmavad or Karma Mimamsa philosophy. And he, in doing that, is now pointing to the Varnashrama system. Different classes of society have their worshipable deity, the worshipable type of work. The Brahmanas, they work by studying and teaching. That is their devata. The Kshatriyas, the royal order, they protect the earth. So the earth is their devata. The Vaishyas, they have their Vaishya activities. So those activities are their devata, their worshipful deity. And the Sudras serve the higher classes. So that service to the higher classes is the Sudras devata, worshipful deity. In this way, Krishna is elaborating on the concoction. But he's presenting the concoction with genuine assumptions, genuine principles, but the conclusion is wrong. The correct general principle is that, yes, society should be divided according to person's propensities. And you'll find these propensities throughout human society, throughout history, even though people may deny it or they may come up with some other kind of social organization. Still, there'll always be persons with the Brahmana propensity, the Kshatriya propensity, the Vaishya propensity, and the Shudra propensity. One of our main missions in pushing on Srila Prabhupada's movement is that we want to create a class of Brahmanas, those who understand knowledge and can teach knowledge. Then everything else will start to happen. Who knows what they're doing today? Take a look at society around you. You'll see no one really knows what they're doing. Everything is determined by economic development. Just like here in Australia, recent polls show that the majority of Australians think that health care is not as good as it should be due to the present Prime Minister. They think aspects of society aren't as good as they should be. They think Australians have become harder and meaner under the present Prime Minister, who's into his third term. Yes. But 85% agree the economy is doing good. Therefore, that's the be-all and end-all today. Let the economy go on. We may be suffering depression, we may be going crazy, but let the economy go on. I've explained to you before statistics from around the world which show that there is an epidemic of depression. But let us be more specific about that epidemic. The depression that's sweeping the world, mental depression, is almost completely concentrated in so-called rich countries. It's not the epidemic of the third world or the developing world. In the richest countries, there's a huge upsurge in mental depression. And then, if you want to go into the fine print of the situation, in those rich countries, if there are poor groups, they are not suffering the depression to the extent that the wealthy sections of society are suffering. So in other words, the culprit is clear. Too much attention on economic expansion. Also, there's no genetic cause for this. It's quite obvious what the culprit is. This is the way things will be unless we can prepare a class of persons who can give instruction because they have knowledge and who can show by their lifestyle how to live properly. Otherwise, what hope is there for people today? They have to be able to look at you and see how to live. So just don't think you're in this for yourself. Kind of the transcendental version of the me generation. No. You are meant to set an example to people so they can look at how you're living and understand how they should live. Don't underestimate the potency of a powerful example. Therefore, our temples are trying to establish a class of devotees who have knowledge and who can teach and show by their lifestyle how to truly be happy, how to make the best use of the short human form of life. This is the most noble goal. What more glorious goal could you have in life? While pushing on your own existence, no matter what ashram you're in, no matter what propensity you have, you're trying to demonstrate to others how they can easily solve the problems of this human form of life and go back to Godhead. Don't be selfish. Vaishnav is always thinking of the others. We must always think, not only should I live life so that I can progress smoothly in Krishna consciousness, but I want others to be able to look at my example and benefit. If you think like this, Krishna will bless you. Now, out of some kind of humility, you may say, well, who am I? And why is it how I live? Why is it that how I live is so important? You have to understand how you fit in with Lord Chaitanya's plan. There have to be proper examples. Now, if you say, it's not me, well then who is it? Where else are people supposed to look? Everyone who takes to the path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is meant to be an example for society. And don't become bewildered by the so-called happiness of today. You will see more and more how people will take note of how you're living. You'll see that in your lifetime. Don't become mesmerized by the temporary bubble of so-called happiness. We've already discussed how within that bubble of so-called happiness there's so much depression. Things can change so quickly and very soon you can have hundreds and thousands of people looking at you desperate for a solution how to live. It's not that the world leaders understand everything that's happening in the world. They pretend like that. Everything's under control. We're handling crises. We're using diplomacy. We're using the stick of economic aid. We've got everything pretty much figured out through international relations, international negotiations, international trade agreements. Don't be fooled by all that. The world, as always, is an unpredictable place, materially speaking. The only way the world becomes predictable materially is if you follow Krishna's material system. Varnashrama is Krishna's material system for living predictably and peacefully in the material world. Without that, everything is wild. I was just speaking with Aniruddha Prabhu yesterday about how no one on the opposing side in the Cold War knew that the Soviet Union was falling apart. The CIA, with all their advanced technology and huge budget, they were caught off guard when the Soviet Union fell apart. No one predicted that. One of the biggest events of the 20th century caught all the leaders off guard, caught all their intelligence agencies off guard. So this will happen again and again and again. Just like the hurricane that hit New Orleans. They built the levees, the dikes, to hold back hurricane force, I think, up to level 3. And nature sends level 5. Now, level 5 hadn't come for hundreds of years. So everyone thought, it's fine. We're doing okay. Statistics say everything's okay. The scientists say everything is okay. But along comes level 5, and the whole city is knocked out. So don't think, don't be lulled into some kind of artificial slumber that the way it is now, it's always going to be, and it's not really important how we live in Krishna consciousness. No one really cares anyway. No, you will see. You have to give Krishna a chance to use you. If we have a class of devotees who understand spiritual knowledge and can teach spiritual knowledge, and most importantly, demonstrate the spiritual knowledge in their example, Krishna will send people. You have to be willing to play your role, however. If you take the artificially humble route, well, who am I? What can I do? It doesn't really matter what I do. Yes, our philosophy is great, the books are great, but as far as my life and how I live, it's not really important. This is not the kind of humility that is pleasing to Krishna. Every devotee's life is so important because every devotee's life can be an example for others how to live. The men, the women, the children, everyone. People will be watching. They will very shortly come to a universal conclusion that the way they've been living with their intense focus on economic development is driving them crazy. They're already starting to say that. Even newspapers here in Australia, Nityananda Priya showed me, there are editorials appearing saying, this is madness, people are becoming depressed. It's all because of the focus they have in their life. Money, 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 more money. They're not happy. So it's starting to dawn on them that something's wrong, but they don't know what to do. Now, how are they going to know what to do unless you show them another way? But then if you pop out by this kind of artificial humility that doesn't please Krishna, well, who are we? I'm just a young devotee, or I'm just a humble householder. I mean, what does it matter what we do? It matters extraordinarily. Where else are the examples for how society should live? It's you. Yes, you have to look in the mirror and think, I'm an example for society. How you live, how you have your families, how you reach out to others with genuine compassion. This is the only example people have of full and complete spiritual knowledge. They won't get it from anywhere else. People are scratching their heads and wondering, is all religion so fanatical as the examples we're seeing in certain parts of the world? Is there a way you can be spiritual and religious without being fanatical? You all have a great responsibility in this city. First, there has to be a class of brahmanas, devotees who know what they're talking about. and can teach others and show by their lifestyle. That's the first thing that's necessary. There must be a brain in society. Now you may feel, well, who am I? What can I do about this? But somehow Krishna has brought you into his service, regardless of how incompetent and humble you think you are. But you must become competent. That is real humility. Not, well, what can I do? I'm just trying to, you know, wake up in the morning and brush my teeth and find my bead bag. What can I do? That is not real humility. Real humility is, even though I am incompetent and have few abilities, I want Krishna to use me. I want my life to be a sacrifice for others. That is how a Vaishnava thinks. Always the others. How can I set an example so people will be attracted to Krishna consciousness? How are you going to teach them? First you have to know yourself. How are you going to set the example? First you have to behave properly yourself. So, as soon as we take away this intense selfishness, things start to become more clear. I'm living for the sake of others. The Supreme Other, Krishna, and the other people. That is how I follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. Now, in these verses, of course, as we said, Krishna is juggling words. He's concocting. Your occupational duty is your worshipable deity. And then, because he's talking in Vrindavan, he begins to specifically address the occupational propensity in Vrindavan. There are Vaishyas in Vrindavan. Nanda Maharaj is the chief Vaishya. And Vaishyas have four duties. Agriculture, trade, cow protection, and money lending. So Krishna is going to point out to the Vrijavasis, of those four Vaishya or mercantile class duties, we in Vrindavan specialize in Gorakshya, cow protection. Therefore, the cows are our devata. We should focus on that. Once again, the point Krishna is driving home with every verse is, Mahendra Kim Kadishyati. What is the need for Indra? He's going out of his way to arouse Indra's ire. By the time Krishna finishes, Indra is going to be furious. So furious, he's going to attack Vrindavan and send clouds of annihilation that are reserved for the end of the cosmos. He's going to send them to Vrindavan Dham. He's going to be so livid. Now, it may be argued, okay, Krishna, you're telling us that the cows are our deity, and Gorakshya, protecting the cows, that's our worshipable duty. But in order to feed the cows, we need rain, and that's why we need Indra. So Krishna now puts the icing on the cake with some final concoctions. The atheistic Sankhya mechanistic theory, which is still around today. It's always been around as long as the material world exists. There are always going to be fools who say everything happens by random combination of matter. Atheistic Sankhya is slightly a bit more elevated than regular atheistic scientific notions in that atheistic Sankhya acknowledges the three modes of material nature, as Krishna is saying here. The causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe, and through sexual combination, causes it to become full of variety. So this is a more glorified version of atheism. The current scientists say everything happens by random interaction of molecules, and somehow the whole universe over a period of time, manifest as it is now. They don't refer, of course, to any modes of material nature. In atheistic Sankhya philosophy, you consider the highest things to be the modes of material nature, but there's nothing beyond the modes of material nature. Therefore, it's atheism, even though you're talking about Trigunamayi. In this way, you can see that the tendency to dismiss God from the material world is age-old. There's nothing new about it. Krishna is concocting, speaking like this thousands of years ago. What does the Lord say in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16? Asatyam apratishtam te jagadavar anishvaram. They say this world is unreal, asatyam. Apratishtam, it has no foundation. Jagadavar anishvaram. The world, the jagat, has no controller, anishvaram. The jagat means the place, the material cosmos, where things are happening. Events are taking place. But jagadavar anishvaram, in that jagat of happenings, there's no controller. Now, is this fact borne out wherever you look in life? Wherever you look, you see control. You may be a foreigner coming to Melbourne, but you assume someone's in charge. Although you've never met that person, you assume someone's in charge here. You assume there's a mayor, there's a governor, whatever. You've never met that person, though. But immediately you can see, just like the Commonwealth Games, there were persons in charge of all that. It didn't just happen by chance. But when it comes to the whole of material existence, you're willing to accept Jagadavar Anishvara. And the defense of that is, we've never met Krishna. We've never seen Krishna. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives you specific instructions how you can see him. What is the problem? If you want to see Krishna, you have to see Krishna the way he gives to be seen. Otherwise, there's that arrogance. Let me see Krishna my own way. And this arrogance will never allow you to understand what is God. But as soon as you become genuinely humble and say, let me see Krishna the way he wants me to see him, then it's easy. Not a problem. But getting over this big barrier of arrogance, I want to see Krishna my way. We discussed this last weekend, the Hiranyakashipu attitude. Why can't I see? What's the problem? I've got eyes. If I can't see any God, that means there's no God. Bhagavad Gita prepares us to hear what Krishna says, to be sensitive to what Krishna says, and to see Krishna in that way. If Krishna says, Rasaham Apsukantya, I am the taste in water, we try our best to see Krishna in that way. We take it straight on, as it is. And then the Lord in our heart will become pleased and give us more revelation. But if you don't take Krishna's instructions straight on as they are, why should Krishna take you seriously? It's like if you're looking for a job and you get an interview, come Monday 10 o'clock. And you decide, why should I go Monday at 10 o'clock for the interview? I'll just walk in any time. Immediately, the prospective employers will think, you're not very serious. Why should we be bothered with you? I did this. I know this example. Right before I took up devotional service full time, I just finished university and my father had connections, so he had arranged corporate interviews with IBM, AT&T, all this kind of stuff. And so I never told him, but I didn't show up for the interviews. This is considered a great offense in material society. One person found out. One person who knew my father. She was a kind of a marketing executive and she called me on the phone. I heard that you didn't show up for your interview with IBM. You didn't show up for your interview with General Motors. How can you be like this?
Then she instructed me, and she thought she was giving me good advice. You should immediately call those job interviewers up and apologize. Of course I didn't. Obviously, by my attitude, I wasn't interested. But to ordinary society, they took it that I have made a great offense. But I was just, making my message statement that I don't want to go this route. I'm not sure I want to live my life in this way, so I'm not willing to take that step. Of course, it's not that in order to practice Krishna consciousness, you have to turn down your job interviews. But that was just my particular situation. So, anyone can conclude by my behavior, and I'm sure the prospective employers concluded, the guy's not really serious about us. We're not going to waste any time on him. Similarly, what shall Krishna conclude when you don't take his statements in Bhagavad Gita seriously? As we spoke last weekend, Rasahomo Sukhantiya. So simplistic. Krishna speaking poetry. Why do we have to take it so straight on? Yes, you take Krishna straight on and he'll tell you more. He'll reveal to you more. But if you don't take his instructions to heart, why should he speak further? Why should he reveal more to you? Now, let us look more deeply at this demoniac mentality that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. Asatyam apratishtante jagadavra anishva. Aprasparam sambhutam kimayat kama oitukam. They say everything is caused by lust. The random interactions of lust. Men and women come together randomly. The molecules come together randomly. Everything in the cosmos comes together randomly and things happen. This is the ultimate conclusion. You can see how illicit affairs cause human beings to think that indeed randomness is the way of the world. Man and woman come together without any responsibility. They have some liaison. So naturally you think, oh, the whole universe works like that. You actually become mesmerized by lust. Lust is so powerful. It can happen at any moment. Connections can just spontaneously appear. So, yeah, the same thing about the universe. There's so much of this crazy thinking that Anishtra, there's no God in control, comes just because of random illicit interaction between male and female. Think about this. Your head becomes full of madness. That's why in the Bhagavatam, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada describes illicit sexual indulgence to be a mad intoxication. It produces a state of mind that just it's intoxicating. You become deluded, just like you've taken a drug or you've taken some alcohol. Your head starts to spin, you lose sight of what reality is. And since male-female affairs are so random and casual, it's quite obvious. The whole universe is random and casual. Indeed, that is why people today don't care about thinking, is there a controller or not? Is there an ultimate system of control? Why worry about that when right here and now you can have your own random interactions? You can have your own universe of random connections. And obviously the rest of the universe functions in that way too, so there's no need to think about an ultimate controller. What is their conclusion? Kemanya kama haitukam. The hatu, the cause, is lust. So now, today you have everyone glorifying lust. They worship it. And they become more miserable than ever. You can see that in their faces. You should ask yourself, if lust is so wonderful, why do they look so miserable? You ever ask yourself that question? If it's all that it's meant
If it's all that it's presented that it is, why does everyone look so miserable and frustrated? You have to ask questions like that. Otherwise, you'll be bewildered because the presentation is so captivating. This is how you're going to be happy. This is where you're going to get your thrills from. If you're not getting thrills from your current partner, switch. What's the problem? Or add to it. They're speaking this now, even in India. Bollywood is putting out movies blatantly destroying family values and advocating extramarital affairs, even wife swapping. This is coming out in movies now in Mumbai. And where was I explaining this? The movie directors, when they're asked, why are you doing this? They admit, most Indians don't live like this or think like this. But the movie directors and actors do. So we're just being honest. Art is honesty. The people don't live like that, but we do. So we're just presenting life as we live it, and people are coming. They're spending millions of dollars to see these things, so it must be okay. We're giving them real art, real life, and they're paying money. We're making money. They're being satisfied. They're being entertained. Isn't this what it's all about? So even in India, this is going on. The average Indian would never think of doing such behavior, but they'll go to the movies and see it. And sooner or later, they'll become affected. It becomes known as normal, just as it is here in Australia. It's normal. If you're not feeling the thrill with your current spouse or partner, add to it or change. Normal in society. The whole point is, you must feel the thrill. You must feel the thrill of kama. Then you're a successful human being. Arrange your whole life around this so you can worship at the altar of kama. Naturally then, the conclusion is, why worry about anything else? The whole universe has come together randomly, just like my affairs have come together randomly. One, in New Zealand, one Kiwi who moved to Australia and made a huge pile of money, he was telling me how he had a nice family, but when he went to Australia and he made so much money, it didn't make him happy. He actually became depressed. And so he thought, in order to cure the depression, why not have an extramarital affair? Just, you know, add some thrill to his life. He was so depressed, even though he had made so much money. And then, you know, he had that affair and decided to leave his wife, and his friends were flying over from Kiwi to Australia, you know, telling him, don't do this. Even we've done it before. We weren't happy. We regretted it all 10 years later. Don't, you know, you've got nice kids. You've got a nice wife. What are you doing? Generally, that doesn't happen. Generally, people don't have friends like that these days. Generally, the friends say, go for it. Get all you can, you know. If you're not satisfied with her, toss her out, you know. She's probably doing the same thing to you right now. But in this case, he had friends who flew over and were pleading with him. But he, oh, no, no, I just need some thrills. I've been depressed. I made so much money. So that is where you're feeling all the pressure. Have a thrill now. You've got to feel it now. Don't make the mistake of dying without having these thrills. So much pressure is on you through your mind, through your body, conditioning. Bhakti yoga is meant to break that vice of conditioning, that vice-like grip on you. But it takes solid immersion in devotional service. I mean, let's be truthful. Let's be for real. Unless you're solidly engaged in devotional service, you don't stand a chance against that monster. Let's be real, you know? Let's not play, let's pretend. It's not going to happen. So if you're serious about the victory over this destroyer of self-realization, you need a solid immersion in devotional service according to your status. Otherwise, it won't happen. It's too powerful. And once you surrender to that monster, which most people do in this world, you can't even understand what is reality, what is happening in the world, how the world came about. Just kimanya kama hoituka. Random interactions, just like lust affairs. I had this proved to me. I think I've explained to you before. I had a relative. She was number two in the New York City Board of Education. That's the department handling the schools. She was in charge of like a million students. So I was starting to practice Krishna consciousness. So I asked her, you know, where do you come from? In other words, what's your ultimate source? She just looked at me like I was crazy. Where do I come from? I come from my mother and father. Kimanya kama hoituka. That was her conclusion. My mother and father, you know, they felt lust and I came about. That's the ultimate origin of everything. So this is number two, the New York City Board of Education, in charge of a million students. That's as far as she could take her ultimate questions. I came from my mother and father. She kind of said proudly to me, like, oh, could you think of anything more than that? Are you nuts or something? It's plain as day. Where did I come from? My mother and father. Are you trying to have other thoughts that will destroy our family unity? That was also implicit in her answer. Now, are you playing around with doctrines that would deny the supremacy of the mother-father combination? Of course, we do not. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we recognize there has to be family stability, but we don't take that as supreme. Just like Krishna. Krishna's obviously concocting here when he says, these things are supreme. Occupational duty is supreme. And then he's concluding with, lust is supreme. The mode of passion creates this universe, and through sexual combination, the mode of passion causes it to become full of variety. So there's nothing new about that doctrine. Kimanya kama vaituka. The cause is lust. Jagadaro anishra. There's no controller. Now, how are people going to see their way through all these mysteries, all these confusions, all these puzzles? They have to hear it from you. Who else are they going to hear it from? You may exclude yourself, oh, I'm just a new bhakta, or I'm just a this, or I'm just a that. But who else is going to do it? You see anyone else? It's time to come out of your fuzzy thinking that it's going to be someone else and realize it's meant to be you. That means we need to push aside our selfishness, in which we're just so hung up on ourselves. Sometimes even we devotees can, you know, become a bit like navel gazers, you know? Just spend your whole day staring at your navel. Who am I as a devotee? What should I be doing as a devotee? Should I be a devotee? Do you realize how much time you waste like this? That's why we have a regulated hearing process. When you hear from Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, when you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, your consciousness is focused. And as soon as you stop doing that, you know what happens. Start gazing at the navel. Why am I here? Is this really what it's meant to be? Or am I meant really to be here, even though it's really meant to be what it is? Am I meant to be here? On and on and on and on it goes. Reminds me of once our Jayadvaita Maharaj, he was on his way to India in New York City, and he went to change some money at the International Airport in New York City. And the cashier, you know, she expressed her joy at, you know, appreciation for Hare Krishnas. And she said it in a typical New Yorker style.
You know, I really love you people because you really are what you pretend to be. So sometimes we don't know what we're supposed to be about. You kind of drift mindlessly in and out of the temple from service to service. All right, what does the temple president want me to do now? What does Guru Maharaj expect of me? Can I really deal with all this stuff? I don't know. Where's my life going anyway? In this way, we fail to see the reality that you are meant to demonstrate Krishna's teachings for the world, and there's no one else who's going to do it. And if you make up your mind that that's the way it's going to be, Krishna will use you. No matter what your situation is, no matter what your ashram status is, Krishna will use you if you just agree that my life is meant for others. Everything will change when you get to that point. There is the Supreme Other, that's Krishna. There are the people who do not understand a thing about what they should be doing. They have no idea what real religion is. If you don't teach them, if you don't show them, how are they going to learn? Ask yourself that question as you're going through the whole artificial humility thing of, it can't be me. I'm just not capable of doing all that. I mean, someone else. Who am I? Krishna knows that I can't do anything, therefore I'm not going to do anything. And so much time is wasted this way. So, you have to accept your responsibility. Arrange your life so that you get the highest goal of life and you can teach others and demonstrate it to others. Krishna wants to empower you in that way. Okay, any questions? Yes? What was special about that? What was passionate about what?
What was passionate about what Brahma received from the Gayatri?
Nothing. Nothing.
Nothing.
Right. Yes?
It's daunting to face the achievements of Prabhupada. Prabhupada seemed to have a sense of his own position in the scheme of things. He knew that he was going to make an impact, but on the individual world, in comparison to what Prabhupada did, no one could hope to achieve as much as he did. So it's almost like, impossible, it appears to be impossible to be able to achieve all the BAC functions. So you have to fit that in with just doing your part, but that being significant. You see that your part is significant.
Well, first of all, sometimes Prabhupada would say that he was aware of what he was meant to achieve, but also sometimes he would also say that he didn't know whether he would succeed or not. In other words, he was aware of what the possibilities were, but at the same time he was always thinking that I'll just do my best, I'll carry out the order of my spiritual master, and what happens, happens. That's why he said he went to the USA. He chose the USA
because his godbrothers had gone other places and failed, so Prabhupada said, well, I figured, let me go fail in a new place. My godbrothers didn't go to America, so I'll go there and fail. At least it'll be a different place to fail in. And even while he was in the USA the first year, he was always thinking, in 3 more months, I'll go back to India. I'll do the best I can in my old age. I tried to carry out the order of my guru, I'll go back. So there seems to be both things at the same time. He was aware that he was meant to do something very extraordinary. At the same time, he was a humble servitor of the Lord. I'll do my best for Krishna. It's up to the Lord whether I'm successful or I'm a so-called failure. And he never told us, never once, that the reason why I did or I was able to do what I did was because I was a Nitya Siddha. Never said that. He said the reason why I was able to do what I did was I simply tried to carry out the order of my spiritual master. Said that again and again and again. Said, that's the only power I have. That's my secret. That's my mystic power. So you have to take it, as Srila Prabhupada said. Now it's interesting. What did Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers think about him when he was a householder, raising his family and working, and attending the temple quite regularly, very regularly? He explained about himself that, he said, when I was a householder, I was never independent from the temple. I was always coming, always supporting the preacher. But his godbrothers, the prominent ones, they were sannyasis, they were, you know, big moth leaders under Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. They never thought that Srila Prabhupada would ever do what he did. They just remember him as Abhai Babu, very upstanding householder who was very active in supporting the temple. That's how they remembered him. They never, it's like, for example, you have Sri Gaur here. He comes to the temple regularly. He supports the activities here. So they were thinking of Prabhupada in that way. Abhai Babu, he's one of our key Grihastha supporters. He's one of the key backbenchers. Therefore, when Prabhupada did what he did, many of them had a hard time handling it. Because they had been sannyasis for decades. So, when you take Prabhupada's words for how he did what he did, he said, I simply tried to satisfy my spiritual master. I took his words as my life and soul. He said that again and again. So that's the way we have to look at it. And, okay, maybe, probably, you won't do, in terms of impact, what Srila Prabhupada did. But still you can do your little bit and go back to Godhead. You'll never know what you're meant to do or what your capacity is until you try. And then see how Krishna uses you or not. You have to do your best though. And Krishna takes care of the rest. Just like my godbrother Jayananda. He never had a big leadership position in the Krishna conscious society. He was always trying to be the humble servant of devotees, servant of the Rathayatras. And when he left his body, he went back to Godhead. He did his best with sacrifice. That is how to be a big devotee. And if Krishna wants to give you worldwide appreciation, the devotee humbly accepts. If not, the devotee humbly accepts that too. So you all please take advantage of your great fortune of being members of this temple community. And don't be lulled into slumber thinking, oh, it will never make a difference what I do. It won't make a difference how I live. No one's noticing. No one cares. Don't think like that. And Krishna will agree to use you. Yes?
I'm just thinking about a life should be examples to others. Sometimes we meet people and they're looking for a change in their life, but they they see our life of simplicity and cleanliness and rising early and these things, and they think they want to hellish, they just don't want to, well, they're not really attracted. And they, those people disqualify for that, or should be presented another way, or really attractive.
They may say that now, but wait till they start feeling the pinch. You think it'll never happen here in Australia? Things will always be rosy materially? I told you some years ago about how one 80-year-old man told me what life in Australia was like in the 30s during economic depression, during World War II. He says he remembers there was a job open for a stock boy. Is that what you call it? Stock boy? And there were 300 applicants. He got up early in the morning to stand in line, you know, to get this job. And when he got to the place, there were 300 persons in line for a job as a stock boy. He remembers what his family did for recreation. On Sunday, they would just put on their one set of Sunday finest clothes and go walking in the town from one end to another. And that's what everyone did. That was the entertainment. The women were out plowing the fields because the men were overseas fighting the war. These things will never happen again. Never again. In any case, whether there is material calamity or not, we're not doomsdayers. In all situations, we want to go on serving Krishna. In all situations, we want to live a proper example. So we're not going to change our tune because people don't appreciate. They don't like rising early and cleanliness. We're supposed to sleep in all day and be dirty, and then they'll be attracted to bhakti. Yeah, you people are just like us. I can relate to you now. Wow, you have lots of divorces. Yeah, you're just like us. Just last month, I was in Wellington, and I was going to go for a swim in the bay, which is always cold. So I have a steamer, a wetsuit. So I put the wetsuit on, and as I was walking, to the water, this well-to-do man, business executive guy, comes up to me. Wow, I can't believe it. How did Krishna's put on wetsuits and go swimming? Wow. Now I can relate to you guys. Now what was I supposed to say? Yeah, we're just like you, see? Yeah. Now you can become Krishna conscious easily because you see me in a wetsuit. I just laughed, I said, look, the fact is the body needs exercise. When you're flying on a plane all the time, a great cure for jet lag is to jump into some ocean water. So that's all I'm doing. I think we have much better things to teach you than this. But he took it. He just flipped out on the mundane aspect. Wow, I didn't even know. I thought you guys just, jumped up and down on the street and played those cymbals. But now I see that you're a real person. You put on a steamer and you're going swimming. Now, at that point, some devotees would say, wow, yes, we're just trying to show we're just like you. We're just trying to make it so that you can relate to us more. And I just laughed. I said, what is so important about this? Is this the only value in us that you can see? I hope not, I told him. And I invited him to come to our center, come to the Gaur Yoga Center. He actually came. And now I'm seeing that there are other things about you all. So we're not going to change our tune just because people have an attachment for Kali Yuga vices, mundane existence. We're not going to imitate that. No matter how they glorify us for that. And you have to watch out about this. It's a good point. You'll notice that with your family, your mundane family and friends, as soon as you do something material, they glorify you like anything and they appreciate you. Have you noticed that? whatever spiritual you do, they have no appreciation. But as soon as you do something mundane, they just make such a huge mountain out of it.
You're going to school. You got a job. You're married.
You have a child. Welcome to the real world. You have to show them, if you're doing those things, that you're doing them with a different purpose. And don't be ashamed to show them that. Gradually, gently, tactfully. But we are different. And we're not ashamed about that. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.